welcome to the Astroholic Explains, exploring the universe one question at a time with Dr. Alfredo and Chris Carpinetti.
You're listening to a brand new episode of the Astroholic Explains with me, Chris, and
me, Alfredo, the Astroholic.
This episode is going to be a little focused around the not quite apocalyptic, but still pretty bad, potentially. So I know things, as far as I understand, have changed a little bit over the last, well, year or so in terms of planetary defense.
Yes, the DART mission that hit Dimorphos, the moon of asteroid Didymos. The Didy moon. It should have been called Didy moon. I literally will have to petition the International Astronomical Union for that to be changed. But anyway, it hit this moon. You can imagine it as a binary asteroid, a slightly smaller asteroid around a slightly bigger asteroid. And it moved the moon. The spacecraft was designed to impact, to test kinetic impactor to see if we could deflect an asteroid, and yes, we can.
Incredible.
We literally moved a celestial object. That is absolutely incredible. Yes. So yes, our planetary defense capabilities have very much improved. So what do you want to know?
Obviously, every so often you see those big news stories about world-ending asteroids, but you know,
overrated, but yes.
Yeah. So the dinosaurs, they had the Chicxulub asteroid, which was not good for them. Yet there have been, or there must have been, other enormous meteorites that have impacted Earth.
Yeah.
But not caused quite as much devastation.
Actually, there are.
What do we know about them?
The one that hit Planet 66 million years ago that wiped out the dinosaurs, many. It was very much a series of bad events, and the decision was terrible. But there have been a few other impacts that were not as big, but have been less devastating.
Those are the ones I want to know about.
And I have the perfect expert to discuss that. For this episode, we are joined by Professor Birger Schmidt, and he will tell us about some of these other impacts that have happened through the history of our planet. Professor Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me to this. I love to talk about asteroid impacts. It's one of the most exciting things I know of in science.
So thank you very much. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do before we jump in with the asteroid impacts?
Yeah, I'm a professor in geology, but at a later stage in my career, I've moved towards something that I call astrogeobiology. I try to look on the history of Earth from not only an Earth science perspective, but also from an astronomical and a biological perspective. And I came into this research area when I became interested in the reason why the dinosaurs became extinct in 1980. I'm sure you know of that. Then the Alvarez group in Berkeley, they gave evidence that a big asteroid hitting Earth had wiped out dead dinosaurs. I wrote an article where I was a young PhD student at the first year of my PhD studies, and I wrote a scientific article where I heavily criticized the famous Nobel Prize laureate and gave a list of arguments why he was wrong. Luis Alvarez, the Nobel Prize laureate in physics, came to Sweden for another occasion for a dinner with the Science Academy here. And he asked that he wanted to meet this Schmitz who had attacked him. And he became quite surprised when it was a first year PhD student that he met. And we had a very, very nice chat. And he invited me to Berkeley to do my postdoc with him. And eventually, it's very embarrassing, eventually I realized that I was right in some details, but he was right in the whole story. And I started favoring volcanism. But then after that, for 40 years, I've continued to develop that kind of research that the Alvarez group initiated. So,
well, it took a while to find the actual physical evidence that Chicxulub actually happened. So I don't think we're going to hold it against you that you were wrong back then, but you made some good points. Let's jump in with some of the more recent impact. Can you tell us a bit about the Popeye and the Chesapeake Bay impacts?
Yes, we know of 200 impact craters on Earth. And these 200 are just a very small fraction of all the asteroid impact craters or impact craters that have formed on Earth. If you look on the moon, it's just covered by impact craters, although they are very old. But among these 200 craters that we have found that are preserved, most of the craters, several thousand craters, have eroded away. But among those 200 craters that we know, it happens to be that two of the largest ones formed exactly 30 million years after the impact, the huge impact that wiped out the dinosaurs. We now know that the crater is on the Yucatan Peninsula, the Chicxulub crater. But there are two large craters that formed 30 million years later. It's the Popeye crater in northern Siberia that is 100 kilometers in diameter. The Chicxulub crater is around 200 kilometers in diameter. So the Popeye crater is the largest asteroid impact crater that we know of for the last 65 million years. But at the same time, another really big crater formed at about very close in time. The Chesapeake Bay crater formed in New Jersey, in what is New Jersey today. And this overrepresentation of two big craters, like 30 million years after the crater after the impact that wiped out the dinosaurs, this overrepresentation of two craters has created a lot of discussion and thoughts. Two craters is not a very good statistical number. But the fact that out of the 200 known craters, the two of the largest ones formed so close in time to each other and 30 million years after the KT boundary impactor, still it's worth to think of it. So I should mention also that there has been a hypothesis, a theory, that Earth is bombarded by big comets with a 30 million year periodicity. And this somehow feels very nice in relation to that hypothesis that 66 million years ago, we had the KT boundary impactor. 36 million years ago, we had the Popeye and the Chesapeake Bay impact. So it gives some although very weak, support for that. Comets from very, very far out in the outer solar system could, with a certain periodicity, change orbits and strike Earth.
Are we due one?
Yeah, I will come to
six
million years. We are like 30. We're 30 million years later, so I'll get to that. But so the reason why scientists have argued that there is a 30-year cyclicity in big comet impacts is because the solar system travels around the center of the galaxy, and one orbit around a full orbit, a galactic year, is 250 million years. So in 250 million years, we make a full orbit around the center of the galaxy. But on that path, we also go up and down, like like, you know, a wooden horse in a carousel Tivoli, that it goes around, but it also goes up and down, an undulating movement. And in this undulating movement, every 30 million years, we pass through the galactic equatorial plane, where there is believed to be either a lot of dark material, dark matter, or a lot of dust. And this dust or this dark matter in the equatorial plane would disturb the comets that are far out, that are at the outer edge of the solar system. And when they get disturbed every 30 million years, the Earth gets hit by comets. So Popeye and Chesapeake Bay, although the statistics, the numbers is low, still it fits a little bit. 30 million years later, 6 million years ago, or I mean, all these numbers are approximate. So do we have to worry about a big comet coming right now, coming somewhere soon? No, because science has developed, and we know a lot more today than when these theories were created. Like 40 years ago, when I started my research, the belief was that most of the large craters on Earth, they were formed by comets, by large comets. So the Popeye crater, Chesapeake Bay crater, there are other very large craters, Moroqueng, Manicouagan, Siljan in Sweden. The belief was 40 years ago that these craters had formed by comets. But as science has evolved, we now know that almost all the large craters have formed not by comets, but from asteroid impacts, asteroids coming from between Mars and Jupiter, from the asteroid belt. Comets have much higher speed when they hit Earth. It's more like a heads-on collision, whereas an asteroid striking Earth may come like from side at the back, hitting us from the back, having not two different speed compared to us. But we now know that the Popeye crater, and probably also the Chesapeake Bay crater, we're not sure about that yet, but the Popeye crater, it formed by a large asteroid from between Mars and Jupiter. And there are no big craters. Like if you go 30 million years before the KT boundary, there are no big craters known, and there are no really big craters known from the last 5 or 6 million years. So it was a beautiful idea, and built on low statistics. This is what happens when you. They sometimes say the more data you, if you have a good theory, don't get more data, because that will destroy. That's a saying that we have in science. The best answer to the question, why was there two such big craters? Why did two big craters formed at that time? Yeah, it looks as if it was just coincidence, but I'm sure that this question is not solved finally yet. People will continue to look into this.
When if we talk about the effects on Earth after Popeye and Chesapeake Bay, how did they differ in terms of devastation from the dinosaur killing asteroid?
Yeah, the Chesapeake Bay impact had very little effect on Earth, but the Popeye impact, similarly, it had some effect, some minor climatic effect. You can find an ash layer, even in Italy, you can find the ash layer from the Popeye impact. But the effects on life was not very big. But you have to think of that impactor that created the Popeye crater had much less energy. So the effects were not very devastating. You see some climatic effects, but there's no major extinction, no there's no boundary there. Geologists, like in the 19th century, they put boundaries where they saw changes in the life, in the strata. So at the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary, already the scientists in the early 19th century put the boundary not only between the Cretaceous and the Tertiary there, but also the boundary between the Mesozoic and the Cenozoic, and which is the Middle Age of Life and New Age of Life. So that, already they knew what a big change in life there was, but they didn't know. We didn't know why there was this big change until the Alvarez group made a discovery. At the equivalent Popeye level, there is no boundary, no zonal boundaries. No one has ever noticed any big change in life.
But the Popeye impactor must have still been quite big to make a 100-kilometer crater.
Yeah, you say that, you typically say that the crater is 20 times bigger than the impactor. So the KT boundary impactor was 10 kilometers in diameter. Mm-hmm. The crater was 200 kilometers. So it was still a big impactor,
but not life-ending. No, very much. The Popeye and Chesapeake Bay impacts are not the only time when we had big carbon-rich space rocks coming down on us. I was curious, can you tell us a little bit more about what happened during the Great Ordovician Meteor Shower?
Yeah, this is where we have done most of our research in Sweden, and we have established now that I would say it's established through our studies of the micrometeorite flux throughout the entire last 500 million years. We have been able to show that there probably was only one time in Earth history when there was a shower of comets or asteroids to Earth, and that was in the Middle Ordovician. And there, the evidence now is very, very strong that a large body, maybe probably 150 kilometer in diameter, 100 to 150 kilometer in diameter, which is 3,000 times bigger than the body that hit Earth at the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary. So we know that such a big body was slammed into small fragments, into pieces in the asteroid belt. And there is a lot of evidence in favor of that now. First of all, if you look on the 200 impact craters that we know of, you will see that there is this definite peak of craters there in the interval from 460 to 430 million years. There are definitely at least 10 times more craters in that interval than in any other comparable time interval. So it's the only time when the Earth has been hit by an asteroid shower or a comet shower. And we also have found many hundreds of fossil meteorites in a quarry in southern Sweden. There's a quarry in Middle Ordovician limestone, and this is how our whole project started. In a quarry, the quarry workers started to find fossil meteorites, and until today, we have found 130 fossil meteorites. We started this in 1990, and we have found 130 fossil meteorites, and they are all of one kind. They are ordinary chondritic, like regular stone meteorites. And these meteorites, what is quarried there is the seafloor sediments that have lithified, that have hardened to rock, and they saw the limestone into plates that you put on your floors or in buildings. You have them in floors, and during this quarrying, they found that all over the seafloor there were meteorites, we have made a systematic search for meteorites on the seafloor, and we can see that there are 100 times more meteorites than what there should have been. We see that the flux of meteorites must have been probably two orders of magnitude higher than in any other period of history. Wow. And this fits very nicely with this peak in impact craters. So we both have evidence of that. There are more craters. They are mostly small. I have to mention that they are mostly small, these craters. And there are more. So there are more craters in the interval 460 to 430 million years ago. There are all these fossil meteorites on the seafloor, on the ancient seafloor. These meteorites are now at the Chicago Field Museum in the United States. So they have been transferred there. But then we provided the third evidence, taking big chunks of limestone, dissolving them in acid. And when we do that in the Ordovician, we get thousands of chromite grains, enormous amounts of extraterrestrial chromite grains from all the micrometeorites that fall on Earth. So to prove that these are anomalous amounts, that there is an enrichment of chromite, we had to take samples from 15 different time periods in sediments from the last 500 million years. So we have taken samples from 35 million years ago, large chunks of rocks. I think we have taken 1,000 kilograms of limestone from Italy, that is 35 million years old, transported it to Sweden, dissolved it. We have near Gubbio in Italy, we have collected, I think, 2,000 kilograms of limestone from different time periods, sent it to Sweden and dissolved it in our astrogeobiology lab. In Italy, we often get questions from bypassers who said, when we tell them what we're doing, they say, can't you take one of our bad politicians with you? And I say, we only dissolve limestone in our lab. I'm sorry. You have to deal with this here. So, but anyway, from 15 different levels, from 35 million years ago, 65 million years ago, et cetera, all the way throughout the entire Phanerozoic, we have dissolved altogether about 10,000 kilograms of limestone in a specially built laboratory. And we were able to show that it's only in the Ordovician that you have this enormous increase in flux of micrometeorites. So
that is fantastic. Do we know what this influx of meteorites, how did the influx affect Earth? It's not going to be like a major impact, but I wonder if there is other impacts.
As you know, we scientists are paid for discussing and debating and quarreling about things. So, and if we have nothing to debate or quarrel or fight about, we will not get our salaries. So there is no mass extinction at the time. But there is something else that happens with life. During the Middle Ordovician, the opposite actually happens, but it's a gradual process. But biodiversity increases on Earth. That in the Cambrian period, the biodiversity, it was just after when we only had very primitive animals on Earth, but the biodiversity, the different types of species were very low. And then in the next period, the Ordovician, the biodiversity starts to increase, lots of new species. And this increase in biodiversity happens to take place during the exact period when we have this influx of asteroids, this enhanced influx of small asteroids, meteorites and micrometeorites. And of course, I argue that this coincidence could mean something. And we have tested different ideas but it's still being debated. So there's no final answer. But one idea is that all the dust that was coming continuously, there was dust coming from the asteroid belt, from this breakup. It was nothing like the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary, that it was completely dark. It was more like that some sunlight was blocked out during a very, very long time, because this flux went on during many million years. And one hypothesis is that this weak dust cloud with a slight cooling of Earth, that triggered an ice age. And we know there was an ice age developing at about the same time. So some scientists say that it's the ice age that explains the biodiversity increase. And we say, yeah, but perhaps the ice age was triggered by this dust. So the breakup, the dust, the ice age, the biodiversity increase. So how will an ice age increase biodiversity? Yeah, before that you had an Earth with about the same temperatures everywhere. But if you cool down, you get climate zones. And when you get many climate zones, life has to adjust to many more niches. So, and I personally think that we have provided some strong evidence that this dust does trigger an ice age, but you could easily bring in a few of my colleagues who would argue and say that it's not like that. So this is only good, which means that I can continue to do research, and it would be very boring if there was nothing exciting nothing that provokes your curiosity and makes you move on with it. So, okay.
That was a wonderful thought to finish on. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much to today's special guest.
Yes, thank you. It was so interesting to learn about these impacts, this recent, relatively speaking, so 30...
Relatively recent.
Yeah. But yeah, they were it's very interesting to understand that, yes, there is a risk from cosmos, but it is not clear cut. Ooh, the size, it's all that matters. It's also where it hits. But at least we can be a little bit more happy knowing that we're getting better with planetary defense. And there is no known asteroid of those sizes, large asteroids, that is on a collision course with our planet. So
we're safe for now.
We are safe for now, or at least we are, as much as we know of the things that are around Earth, we feel pretty safe.
Thank you for easing my worries on that front.
Wonderful, happy to help, and see you next time.
See you next time.